Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talkin' Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel, joined as always by my co-hosts, Mike Popovic, Pat Donahue. We've got another Maryland win to talk about. Maryland beats Virginia 42-14. Another bad start for Maryland. They were down 14-0 just 10 minutes into the game, but then rattled off 42 unanswered points. They're 3-0 for the third straight season, the first time since 1980 that they've been 3-0 for a third straight season. Mike, I'll start with you, just your general impressions of the game. I know you were there in College Park on the ground, so what were your general impressions?
Well, certainly we were surprised by the slow start. At the same time, we had been there, done that against Charlotte the week before. There was plenty of football to be played, but I felt, because it was a Power 5 team, I felt a little less confident about the ability to dig out. And early on, you know, Virginia, I thought Virginia offensively was doing a really good job of mixing it up, keeping Maryland off balanced. And they went with the freshman quarterback again in this one. We weren't sure who they would go with, but they went with Calandria. And, you know, first quarter, he's 6-7 for 108 yards and a touchdown. And, you know, they're running a little bit of spread. They're running heavy formations. They're doing a really nice job. And so, you know, my initial impression was that Virginia was doing a good job. Maryland was getting off to a slow start. It was a little bit more concerning given the opponent. And then, you know, penalties, some big-time penalties at inopportune times plagued the Terps, especially in the first half of this one.
So, Pat, you know, we talked last week about the slow start, and we probably weren't as that worried about a slow start versus Charlotte. It's a one-off. How concerned are we now that this has happened twice in a row, pretty much the exact same way, 14-0 down, and then you regroup?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. It's the fact that it happened twice in a row, because in a vacuum, I would feel the same way about a slow start against Virginia as I would against Charlotte, pretty much. And, you know, say the important thing is that they overcame it and slow starts happen, yada, yada, yada. But the fact that it happened 2 weeks in a row against inferior opponents and at home, and in primetime situations, and almost mirror images of each other. Not great, I will say that, but I will also then go on the other side of that and say they both times regrouped, didn't lose their heads, didn't let it snowball, and not only got themselves back in the game, but dominated the rest of the game outside of the first 10 minutes. So it's kind of funny because, like, yeah, not ideal starts. Obviously, this team has an MO of being a slow starting team at this point, but you know, as long as they keep winning by 20 plus points every week, that seems to be okay for them. You know, maybe they're figuring things out, and I think it speaks to the coaching staff, not only Loxley but all the assistants, and the adjustments that they're making, not only at halftime but even prior to halftime. I think that really speaks to that. So yeah, I slow starts, hopefully they can correct that, but it is building some good resiliency for this team early on in the season.
And, you know, offensively, we talked last week about Virginia's biggest weakness seeming to be their run defense. And while Maryland scored, what, 5 rushing touchdowns or 4 rushing touchdowns in the game, they didn't really run the ball all that well until they got Colby McDonald into the game towards the end of the game. Most of the success came through the air. Big day for Talia Tungavailoa, 19 of 30 for 342 yards and a touchdown, including a big, 63-yarder to Jayshon Jones. So, Mike, how much confidence does that give you about this offense, especially headed into a week against Michigan State, where so far they have a really bad pass defense, and that was taken advantage of by Washington last week?
Well, the one thing, Virginia knows that they had a bad defense, run defense coming in. I'm sure that that was a point of emphasis. It was still concerning early on, though, to your point, that they weren't able to run the ball as effective as we would have liked them to have been. We knew that that running back room, though, coming into the season was pretty stacked. We knew that that was an area of strength as well. While the wide receivers get a lot of the attention, we knew that the running back room was one of which they were going to be in good shape. We knew what they could do. But to see McDonald emerge was really nice to see. I mean, Hemby, they seemed to almost reverse roles where Hemby was a short yardage guy for them. And by the way, I the red zone play calling has got a lot to be desired for. But Colby McDonald seemed to take Hemby's role with the 10 rushes. He had one more than Hemby, but in terms of the production there, he also had a touchdown. But no, certainly good to see when other guys get an equal amount or more and step up and are productive. That was good to see. And look, sometimes, though, even with a matchup that favors you, it does take patience where maybe early on the offensive line is having some trouble, but you keep pounding enough away that you hope by the second half that they start to fade. And hey, if teams want to load up on the run, I mean, certainly the Terps can pass to help themselves out. And I think that's the other aspect of it that's a good thing, is that, hey, I mean, that's okay. We've got the most accomplished quarterback in the Big Ten coming back this year. So that's a good thing. But look, we're always going to be watching this offensive line week in and week out.
Yeah, and speaking of that offensive line, it seems like they have a more solidified rotation. We did see Gottlieb Ayedze in the game last week, but he was rotating in at right guard. He really was not playing any tackle. It was still Connor Fagan over there on the right side. I'm still not overly impressed with what I see from him. It seems like far too often when plays get blown up in the backfield, it's him who's standing around with nobody to block. And this is against not the greatest pass rushers in the world the first 3 weeks. So we'll see what goes on there. But Pat, it seems like the offensive line looks more solid than it did early in the year. We saw only one sack allowed to Virginia. Fagan allowed that sack, but it was only one sack allowed to them. So hopefully, does that, I mean, how much confidence does that give you headed into conference play here? And we know how many Big Ten teams have really good pass rushers.
Yeah, I mean, I think the signs of improvement are a good thing. As a unit, you know, the offensive line is one of those that requires some chemistry and some camaraderie to really gel together. And they seem to be progressing there. You know, 3 weeks in, competition has ramped up slightly each week, and they're looking better and better. So it's really all you can ask for. We won't really know too much until we see them against that marquee Big Ten competition like you spoke about. But, yeah, I mean, other than Fagan, you know, things are starting to really come together. And, you know, sometimes if you have four good, solid starters on the offensive line and one, you know, kind of weak spot, sometimes those four solid pieces can scheme to kind of make up for that one weak spot. It's very hard to have an offensive line that has, you know, five really, really solid players across the board. So, you know, coaches are kind of used to coaching that way and scheming that way. But, yeah, it's going to definitely require for those other four and even Fagan himself to continue to progress as the season moves on.
And Mike, what about run versus pass? It seems like this line, at least in my eyes, seems to be more comfortable pass blocking than run blocking to this point.
I'm still not sure that I have a really good read one way or the other on it, to be very honest with you. I mean, generally any offensive line likes run blocking over pass blocking, and pass blocking is a tougher thing to do. So I'm not sure, to be honest with you, that I've really gotten a feel one way or the other on that. But I would certainly not expect Fagan to be at right tackle next week, or this coming week, I should say.
I mean, it would be, given the talent that came in, especially with Ayedze and then Marcus Dumervil from LSU, the fact that they haven't been able to crack the rotation is a little bit concerning. Obviously, Ayedze was dealing with that injury, but it sounds like he's been healthy for 2 weeks and he hasn't gotten in there.
And maybe that's just to get Fagan reps, Pat. I mean, that's just.
Yeah, I was going to say it could be to spread the reps out sort of thing. It could have been a conditioning thing early in the season, not only because of the injury or just in general. But yeah, it's the important thing is they need to figure out who those guys are, who the five, you know, guys are sooner rather than later. They've done it for most of those positions. So let's get it figured out now that we're about to start playing some Big Ten teams.
And one of the things I think you saw, though, at times is they'll have a tight end that won't necessarily be on the edge to help the tackle. Sometimes they do, but you'll see where the tight end will step up right behind the center and will be looking to help out in any of the A gaps. So center is another position that was not exactly an area of strength since Deary left in the transfer portal. So you'll see them use a variety of tight ends there as a guy that is an extra blocker in the backfield for the Terps when it comes to pass protection there. And I will say, though, Zach, I thought of Pat early on, though. I thought at times, even though he was only sacked once, Talia did have some breakdowns. Now, some of that was on coverage, but some of that was he got rushed by Virginia, even if it didn't show up as a sack.
Yeah, it seemed like there were a lot of free rushers off the edge, and it's hard to know whether that's on the line or whether that's on him not sliding the protection. But yeah,
to hit a receiver pretty quickly.
Yeah. So defensively, Virginia, they were able to rack up 354 yards. Blown coverage in the back end, way too common, especially early in the game. We saw that their first two drives that ended in scores. Mike, we talked about it last week against Charlotte, where we saw obviously the obvious blown coverage, Jaquan Shepherd allowing that long touchdown against Charlotte. But we saw it again, the first two drives, way too much. And this is a secondary with a ton of talent. I mean, is that a communication issue, or is this something we should really be worried about moving forward as far as talent goes?
Yeah, I mean, and against a team that wants to throw the football, but is showing they're a heavy formation. You just have to think that they're trying something up their sleeve on first down there. But it's certainly a little bit of a concern. But I mean, since he's new to the system, I'll chalk some of that up to that. But I think that's just getting your eyes caught in the backfield there on that play. They had it set up nicely and they executed. Now, Bo Braid did not play in this game. Glendon Miller filled in for Bo Braid, yeah. So let's not forget that. But Shepherd, coming from Cincinnati, a veteran guy, you'd like to think that he wouldn't fall for exactly what happened there. And I think there was a play, too, where Trader got his eyes caught in the backfield on a play as well. But, yeah, to have that happen back-to-back weeks like that is tough. And you give them momentum, and you gave them momentum twice. And, again, you had penalties early on that didn't help things either for this team. Both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, they were able to get four turnovers as the game wore on, three interceptions and a fumble, that all on Calandria, including, what was it, two or three interceptions in a row. I mean, he kind of fell apart there at the end, which he definitely had some freshman moments, as you could expect from a kid like that. But how about Donnell Brown, outside linebacker, defensive end, two interceptions already, Pat, as a defensive end, kind of big guy. He's getting his hands up and swatting passes to himself. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and he did this even before coming to Maryland. He showed that he had that sort of instinct, that playmaking ability to not only rush the passer, but also, you know, deflect passes, catch deflected passes, all that sort of thing. So very good on him, getting off to a great, you know, start here for the Terps. And then, you know, Tar Heap still had two interceptions. This past week, he looks good. The secondary itself looks good. Mike brought up a great point with Bo Braid being out. I think that could really answer kind of those early breakdowns that you saw on the back end. I mean, I've spoken before about how important I think the safety position is to any defense. And when you take out a starting safety, even though you still had Trader there, that's taken out kind of he relies on Braid to have his half of the field, you know, covered. And that really, they play off of each other. So it doesn't surprise me about a couple early breakdowns in coverage early in that game, but it was good to see that they eventually got it together and were, and not only this game but all season long, this has been one of the most ball hawking Maryland defenses, especially early in the season, that I've seen personally. The turnovers have just been coming in bunches, and it doesn't usually seem to be that way, so that's been great to see.
Yeah, even given the talent in the secondary the last few years, it seems like interceptions is one thing they've struggled to get. We had that one year, Tar Heap Still's freshman year, he had a decent number. But other than that, you know, they've had a lot of talented DBs come through here, Nick Cross and all these other guys, and they still seem to struggle to get interceptions. So that's a good sign for the future, especially all these offenses that want to throw the ball a lot. If you could back that up with some picks, obviously a good thing. One final note on this game, special teams. Octavian Smith Jr. was the primary kickoff returner the first 2 weeks of the year. He had some trouble fielding those kicks. A lot of them ended up on the ground. None of them ended up in a turnover, but it was not great. It didn't look great back there. So Loxley puts Braden Wislowski back there, the true freshman, and he returns his first collegiate kickoff return for a touchdown. And really, Mike, that turned the game around because 14-0, Virginia had just scored their second touchdown and gone up 14-0, and boom, it's 14-7. And that gave you some hope. Like, all right, as soon as that happened, one of my buddies texted me, here comes another 38-0 run. And it was a 42-0 run. But even so, that seemed to turn the game around. I mean, it's probably safe to say, right, that this is Wislowski's job as a true freshman kickoff returner to lose.
Well, after that, yeah, absolutely. And they said, Mike Loxley had said that they have seen that a bunch during summer camp, and so that he knew he was capable of it. But you're right, that couldn't have come at a better time. That really jump-started things for this team. And let's not forget, too, two other items here. Preston Howard had one hell of a catch and then leap over hurdle. Defender yeah. or hurdle there. But if you go back to the second offensive drive for the Terps, they had a penalty on that drive. They ended up having to settle for a 55-yard field goal at about midfield. So when you take a look at that, the decision to kick it there as opposed early on after Virginia just scored a touchdown to not punt it and pin them deep, you have to question that a little bit because Virginia was able to score with that field possession. And they had that, again, a lot of different formations and misdirection. And they had that throwback TD pass, even though there was a guy in Calandria's face. He was able to hit the receiver that beat Barham on the opposite side of the field for the touchdown. So that's an area that I look at and say, you know, maybe Loxley should have punted there and pinned him back for a freshman quarterback. But you're right, Wislowski, a freshman out of Southern Pennsylvania, out of I think South Columbia area, had a big play at a much needed time.
Yeah, Pat, one of your Pennsylvania boys.
Yeah, yeah.
His high school tape is full of highlights like that. Like his tape is fantastic. It was good to see this early in his collegiate career that show up on the field.
I'm gonna have to look back at some old stuff. I mean, I do remember him a little bit from like the recruitment process and all that. He obviously, like Mike said, he was showing flashes of this in camp. It makes you wonder. I mean, I think Octavian Smith is still a good athlete for this team and will make some plays at receiver and whatever, but it makes you wonder if Wislowski was showing this in camp, what took so long to make the switch to him and in this position. I mean, clearly he's got a knack for it. That 98-yard touchdown was, you know, electric. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's his job to lose, I would say, at this point. And some people just excel at that sort of thing. It really is, you know, an acquired skill to do. And honestly, punt returns and kick returns are so different, too. You would think that they'd be more translatable, but some guys can strictly do one or the other. But yeah, some people can only do one of those two things. And I think that they, you know, those type of athletes have a place on football teams.
Well, and doing the pregame show, one of my segments, my first segment on the network is with Steve Suter. And that guy certainly was well known for being able to return kicks and had quite a career at Maryland in doing just that. But, you know, and something, guys, that a couple of things just defensively quickly that, and I saw this with the Ravens game against the Bengals on Sunday, is the leverage aspect of things is that watching Virginia, some of the things that they were, some of the completions they were successful on just had to do with out routes where they had the leverage on the defender. And unless you're squaring that defense or squaring that wide receiver up, you know, that guy and not knowing how he's going to break, he had the advantage a lot, and you saw that. They also ran some combinations that worked out well, where it was the same play where the slot receiver did a good job of finding the open space. I noticed a few different times. I wrote it down in my notes here with the way he read things. But that third and 23 play where they threw a 3-yard hitch and got a first down, that shouldn't have happened. But you know, when you run away from your defender, if you got two guys blocking for you, one of those guys has got to get off a block and make a tackle. And then the defender on the receiver making the catch has got to get there. But he ended up getting caught up in the traffic with the two other DBs. And it's like, you're pulling your hair out on that one. But look, they did rebound. They played much better. A lot of interceptions there in the second half. And they made that freshman quarterback look very much like a freshman in the second half, where it looked like a fifth-year senior in the first half.
Yeah, and you look ahead to the next 2 weeks, and we'll look at Michigan State here in a second, but if you're going to start Big Ten play, not a bad thing to start with Michigan State and Indiana before you get to Ohio State. So not that they can take either of these teams lightly, because anything can happen any week in the Big Ten. But on paper, these are two of the weaker opponents on your schedule.
Right.
And Michigan State, more it has to do with the state of the team mentally than necessarily the state of the team physically on with a talent perspective. But Michigan State entering this game, 2-1 record, but the program's in chaos. Mel Tucker, it just came out about 30 minutes before we're recording here, that he is officially, they are officially planning to fire him for cause. They've begun that process now. He had been suspended before last week's game against Washington. DB's coach Harlan Barnett is now their interim head coach, and for some reason they brought back Mark D'Antonio, even though he's got his own issues with as far as what recruitment violations and all that sort of stuff that I guess has been debunked, or they say, well, the investigation resulted in nothing there. But regardless, a puzzling decision. But it's just a mess of an organization. I don't know how the athletic director still has his job. But 41-7 blowout loss to Washington. Barnett described the team as off kilter last week. Their defense gave up 713 yards, which is a new low for the program. So, Mike, how much confidence does that give you if you're Maryland? I mean, Michigan State, Maryland hasn't won in East Lansing since 1950.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, they've only been in the Big Ten for however many years, but yeah, it's 1950. How much confidence does that give you going in? You see a team that's weak, and how does Mike Locksley still get his team to focus and say, look, these guys are extremely talented, and if you start the way that you did against Charlotte and Virginia, there's a good chance you don't come out with a win.
Well, three things there that stand out, and you just mentioned one of them, is that the coaching staff will be able to say, look, guys, A, this is our first Big Ten game. We have not come out of the gates very strong against Charlotte and Virginia. We had to fight back. This is now a better team. As embattled as they are, they're still a better team than Towson, Charlotte, and Virginia. I think, too, look, Maryland's looking for their third straight winning season since the 01 through 03 seasons. But Maryland has not done enough in the Big Ten long enough to just go out, roll out the football, and expect Michigan State to roll over. Look, if I'm Maryland, I'm really just focused on myself and being the best Terp football player I can be for Saturday. Even though they're in battle right now, you have to go into that game assuming they're going to be at their very best. They very well may not be, but it doesn't matter. You have to attack each day in practice as if they will be, and you have to focus on yourself to be the best Terp you can be for Saturday in East Lansing. And on top of all that, too, let's not forget, that's a Washington team that's a top 10 team. They've got a Heisman Trophy candidate, in my opinion, of Michael Penix. They've got three wide receivers that he could throw to, a pretty good offensive line that he's got. I think three of the five starters are back this year for them from last year's team. That is an outstanding Washington team. That is not, the Maryland is not Washington, or not the Washington Huskies. So while certainly, if Michigan State wasn't in battle, they would have played a better game. They likely would have lost that game, and there's still a chance they could have given up, frankly, 400 yards. I don't think this is a great Michigan State team anyway, embattled or not, but there's a lot there for the coaching staff to be able to say, hey, guys, you know, we're not Michigan and Ohio State. We can't just go out there, roll the football out, and expect them to roll over. And, yeah, so, I mean, for all the points I mentioned, I think there's a lot there to keep it in focus and perspective for this team.
So, Pat, you know, if you look at Michigan State, not only do they have the issues with the coaching staff, they've got a ton of injuries. Their best two running backs have been out all year. It doesn't seem like they're going to be back this year. Their quarterback, Noah Kim, completed just 39% of his passes last week, but really wasn't great their first 2 weeks either. Didn't turn the ball over, but didn't really do a whole lot as far as completion percentage. So, defensively for Maryland, it seems like you key on the pass and force them to pass and force this quarterback to prove that he can beat a real defense, because to this point he hasn't been able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, and I think Mike brought up a good point, is that you cannot Maryland's not in a position, regardless of how badly they've beaten three bad teams, to be taking any Big Ten team lightly, regardless of what that team has going on. I think if Michigan, if they didn't have this drama going on, or sorry, Michigan State, if they didn't have this drama going on paper, this would be a fairly even game. I mean, still the line has it at about a one score game. So I think that this would be considered a lot more even. And if I was picking that game with Maryland being on the road and never having won in East Lansing, I would probably maybe slightly favor the Spartans. But given what's going on, I do think this is Maryland's game to lose. I do think that things are probably a little too chaotic over there, but I don't expect it to be easy. I mean, I think that the line is probably going to be pretty close. I think this game could turn into a shootout given the what we've seen from the back end of Maryland's defense so far. I don't know if Bo Braid is slated to play or not. I don't know if they've come out and announced that yet, but if he's not playing, I definitely could see a guy like Christian Fitzpatrick, you know, really putting up some numbers as a, what was the Virginia guy's name? Mitchell, was that their number one receiver? Malik Washington. That's what it was. He
from Northwestern. Yeah.
From Northwestern. Yes. Yeah. He had a game, you know, and that's Fitzpatrick is just as talented and can have just as big of a game. So they're definitely going to have to find a way to stop that. But yeah, that would be where I would be looking to game plan here, is to stop that passing attack. Cause like you said, the running game hasn't gotten going. It hasn't gotten healthy, and Maryland has shown that they can stop the run so far this year, but they've struggled a little against the pass. And you got to be careful of going, you know, touchdown for touchdown with these guys, because when you get on the road, if you fall down double digits on the road, you're going to have to really start scoring every possession just to win in a shootout. So, no gimme. Doesn't matter what's happening over there. Certainly no gimme from a talent standpoint.
And Zach, if I might just interject real quickly, is that if I'm Michigan State's interim head coach, I say, look, guys, we started the year 2-0. Now, granted, they beat Central Michigan and Richmond, but okay, who's on your schedule. They won those two games. Yes, Washington was an embarrassment of a game, but that's a top 10 team. And you may not say they were going to beat us anyway. He probably won't say that, but he'll just say you lost to a very good team. You're 2-1. You can't control what's going on with your head coach right now, but you still have a good portion of your season in front of you. You still have the Big Ten Conference in front of you. Things are getting started here. You're 2-1. It's not a situation where the team is 2-7 going into game number 10 and the season's long gone. It's still early. You can't control the outside stuff, but you can control you, and you can still end up having yourself a good season and becoming bowl eligible. So, you know, with that, I think with the timing of where this is in the season too, and this being the first Big Ten game, you know, you could very well see this Michigan State team come out and play better than you expect. It'll go one of two ways, but again, you can't assume that they're not going to come out and play well. But I'll tell you this, if you're Maryland, you certainly don't want to keep them hanging around. If you do get out to an early start, if you don't get off to a good start, you know, That's not going to be good, because you don't want to give that team any hope. And you know the fans will be pulling, obviously, for those for those players, because they get caught in the middle of this.
Yeah, and Christian Fitzpatrick is a guy that definitely worries me. 6'4", ton of speed, big red zone threat. It seems like Maryland in the past couple of years has really struggled with guys like that, the big physical receivers, because we really don't have. I mean, Tar Heap still is a little guy. He plays mostly in the slot. Jaquan Shepard's going to have a big game. He's going to have to step up. This is going to have to be his moment for Maryland. You got to get physical with Fitzpatrick, and you got to knock him off his game, and you got to be able to make plays on the ball downfield without committing penalties. And that's going to be, I think, the biggest key for this game, because they've got a freshman, Nate Carter, as their running back. I think he's somewhat talented, but their offensive line really hasn't been able to open up consistent holes for them this year. So I do think shutting down Fitzpatrick, and then, you know, they've got two other guys, Jerron Glover and Trey Mosley, who have done pretty well this year in the passing game. Obviously, most of their work was done against their first two opponents, which, as Mike mentioned, not the strongest, but you also really don't know what to expect because Washington was so dominant last week. What do you really have in these guys? Maryland doesn't know, and I don't know that Michigan State knows. Defensively, they gave up a ton of yards in the passing game, 536 yards, 4 touchdowns through the air to Washington last week. One thing I think you can take away from their entire season to this point, Pat, is that they've struggled to generate a consistent pass rush. I think they're averaging a little over a sack a game. So another good opportunity for Maryland's offensive line to take a step forward and solidify, but hopefully another big day for Talia in the passing game, because one other note, the weather's going to be good, and it seems like this is probably the first time since Maryland joined the Big Ten that they go to East Lansing and the weather's good, 78 degrees and sunny.
Yeah, isn't that a blessing in East Lansing,
That's
right?
Hawaii weather for Talia.
It really is, and I too expect a big game from him, not only because of the weather, because like you said, you know, if you're not generating a pass rush against Richmond and Central Michigan, you know, I don't expect that to get better as the competition gets better. So, yeah, so this should really provide some opportunities for Talia to have another good game. It really seems like from looking at the, you know, these last three games, Prather, Jashawn Jones, and Corey Gises have really separated themselves as kind of the top tier, the top hierarchy of the passing game. And that's good. I mean, to have three solid options like that and have defenses not really knowing where the ball is going and have they all kind of have different skill sets. I think Maryland is in a very good spot with their passing game right now, obviously led by one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. So, yeah, I really think that this is setting up for a very big offensive game for Maryland. And we'll see if, you know, Michigan State can match that type of output on offense, but I'm expecting a good one here.
Yeah, Mike, I'd like to see a big game from Roman Hemby. He had a little bit of a down week last week. It would be good to get his conference play started on a high note. Whether that's in the passing game or the running game, because he can do both, I don't really care. But it would be good to see him get, you know, over 100 yards, a score. Be good to give him some confidence after a down week last week, because you're going to need him going into the meat of this Big Ten schedule.
And that takes the pressure off of the passing game, and it takes the pressure off the offensive line when you're establishing that run game on the play action pass or just in general when they don't know what's coming. That's going to be important, and I think with the play calling, it's going to be important to keep a certain amount of run in there. Again, sometimes early on, and as fans, as media members, we might say, why are they doing this here or there? And the goal of every play is to be successful, but if you're wearing down that defensive line, eventually it'll pay off for you, or certainly the hope is that. So I'm with you, and I think they need to at least do what they can to establish themselves there. They don't want to get into a situation where it's pass all the time. That's going to be key, and they'll have their work cut out for them regardless. And you guys talk about the fact that Michigan State hasn't gotten a pass rush, and granted, yes, it's Central Michigan and Richmond, but right now the Maryland offensive line has played against Towson, Charlotte, and Virginia.
True.
So I'm not going to assume that they're going to come out and have their way with Michigan State's defensive line. I would still tend to think that until they prove otherwise, we need to see it. But I think the play calling, the formations, protecting Talia is going to be important. One thing you do know, the Terps are going to take shots downfield. They're doing more of that to their credit. But I will say with Chambers was out the second game. He had a nice game the first game, as did Dyches against Towson. But Chambers was out the second game, came back, didn't have as big a game against Virginia. Prather did. But let's not forget about him because he's a deep threat.
Yeah, it does seem like, Pat, you mentioned Prather. It seems like Talia has really grown just in these first 3 weeks, his relationship with Prather. You saw especially the first week, it seemed like a couple of those passes were off to him. They were still getting their timing worked out. He's got the timing with guys like Dyches and Jashawn Jones, but good to see Prather. And I mean, he's electric down the field.
Yeah, he's the field stretcher, right? And then you got Jones, who can do a little bit of that, but it's also very good at working underneath. He can kind of run the whole route tree, work inside and outside. And then you got, you know, Dyche just being the big body guy, so in the red zone threat. So I really, like I said, I like the combination of skill sets they have, and then still got guys like Ty Felton and Octavian Smith and other guys there who can really supplement that work too. So I think this is, especially with the weather and all, I think we're in for an exciting game. It could be, you know, if you catch Michigan State with their pants down, maybe it's a field day for Maryland and the Maryland offense. But if you come out and our defense is not prepared, then we could see a shootout. I don't really see a low scoring option here or a boring, you know, if it was bad weather, that's one thing. But I think it's going to be a game with some fireworks.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to expect given the state of Michigan State's program. It seems like if right. they show up, it's going to be a high scoring game on both sides. And if they don't show up, it's going to be a high scoring game on Maryland's side. But yeah, it's hard to know what to expect.
I think they show up. I really do.
That was my next question, because Maryland opens as 6-point favorites. Pat, you alluded to it's a 1-score line, which seems low given the state of Maryland's program or Michigan State's program. But it also, Maryland hasn't exactly played up to their competition the last 3 weeks the way that they probably should have, at least in the first quarter. So, Mike, you're going to say that Michigan State covers 6?
Yeah, well, I see 7 here.
Has it gone actually, up?
Yes, okay. I just saw 7 too.
So it went up. Okay.
And I just saw 7.5 right now.
I think that's probably a quick reaction to the Mel Tucker news.
Yeah. But I do think that Michigan State covers. I'll take Maryland in this one, but I do think Michigan State covers, and I think they'll come out, especially after the way that they played last week. I think they'll come out a lot better. They're at home. That's a big help. If this game was on the road, I think that maybe Maryland covers the spread. But with Michigan State being at home, again, this season doesn't have to be a throwaway. They started out 2-0. They lost to a good Washington team who they would have lost to anyway. Their coach is not going to tell them that, but it's nothing to hang their head about in terms of the loss or to the team that they lost to. The way they lost, that's a different story. But I just don't see this being one where they're going to throw in the towel. Not yet. It's too early in the season. And again, Maryland, just worry about yourself, and that's what they have to do. But we take a look at the schedule, guys. You know, if we're picking wins and losses, this was a game that was a coin flip game. And if you want to get to your 8-win season, maybe a 9-win season, you've got to take this one. And I think that weather, you're not kidding. That certainly is a help for Leah, who struggled in the Wisconsin game, for instance, in bad weather last year. Actually, so did Deary, for that matter. But I guess that's why it went south. But, I see Maryland wins. But, yeah, I think they'll cover that spread.
Michigan so, Pat, does Michigan State keep it within a score? A touchdown?
I think so, but this is just striking me as a game that could come down to who has the ball last or who has the momentum in the second half. I could even see an overtime, you know, a walk-off 6-point win type of thing. I really think is going to be a high-scoring last team to have it. I think that's why that spread's at around 6-7. I think that they know the defenses are not going to be able to keep them out of the end zone, and it's probably going to come down to a last possession type of game. I think Michigan State's going to come to play, and I think it's going to be – I think that they're a live dog here for sure. I definitely think that they can cover the 7 points and possibly even win this game outright. Yeah, I'm looking for a 1-score, possibly overtime, high-scoring game.
So are you sure you're not working for NBC here?
Why is that?
Wow, they want people to tune in.
They want people to tune in? Well, I'm going to be tuning in, and I want to be entertained, so maybe it's just that.
I'll be in Denver, but I'm going to try to find it somewhere. I got to find it somewhere out there.
Hey, it's 2023 going on 2024. Anything's possible.
I can at least find it on my phone up there in the mountains somewhere.
Hey, I'm glad NBC is showing so much love for Maryland. I mean, the Saturday night game with Charlotte, and then...
That was more that there just wasn't anything else on, I don't think, but...
Well, welcome to early season college football, right?
That's harsh.
Week two slate was bad.
Very bad, yeah.
This week's slate's a lot better, especially the night slate.
Yeah.
Two things just quickly. The Indiana game, they've announced that that's going to be a 3:30 kickoff, that game on September 30th in College Park. I'm hoping to be at that one as I was for the Virginia game last week. So 3:30 on that one. The rest are TBDs right now. And
I have a wedding that day. I'm in a wedding that day.
Yeah, so you had mentioned that off air to us a few weeks ago. Well,
people are not supposed to have fall weddings in football.
They're really not. I told them. I was like,
Are they sports fans or not college fans?
Oh, well, yeah. My best buddy's getting married. He's a diehard, you know, Ravens fan. Went to Maryland. He was my roommate there and all. So, yeah.
You didn't have a say.
He's not making the decisions,
right.
Trust me.
So. Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I guess she's not a sports fan, or she doesn't care. She doesn't care.
No, she didn't go to Maryland. She don't care.
By the way, the new lights that they have installed in the light show, Was really cool. It was really cool. I thought, and I got a few pictures when I was in my broadcast booth there. Did a really nice job. And it's funny, the next night being in Ann Arbor for the Michigan, they did the same thing with their lights. And it was really cool that they did it. But that's a nice feature that they have. And I'll say this, to some degree, it was a late arriving crowd to a degree. But I thought all in all, they had a pretty good turnout for that Virginia game.
Yeah, credit to Damon Evans. It seems like they're definitely investing. I mean, it all comes down to availability of money. But it does seem like they're investing. They obviously got the new scoreboard last year. You've got the audio. I think they're improving the audio. They already improved the audio a couple years ago. And now the lights. So obviously good there to see the investment in the stadium, get people out. Especially for night games. And it seems like Big Ten now with the TV deals, you're going to have more of those primetime games.
Yeah. And look, as much as I'm a fan of Friday Night Lights, the high school edition, and that's what Friday Night Lights usually are about, is the high school. And I will say that from a Maryland standpoint, to be able to get people to come to the game on a Friday is much more sellable because they still have the whole weekend in front of them. So you're not competing against other things going on the weekend on campus or elsewhere. So that can be beneficial. I know ultimately it's a short week. The coaching staff is not a fan of that. And for somebody like me that loves high school football that does that on Friday nights, it breaks the tradition. But from a strictly Maryland standpoint, from getting fans, I think it's not a bad idea. And kudos to them for offering discounts on those who had tickets to the Springsteen concert a few weeks ago and that got canceled. Again, that
great
is
marketing.
That is great. Yeah. That's a great, smart idea. That's a smart idea. Great marketing to try to make something there and get people down. And to me, Friday night, I know that was a Saturday night game, but Friday night or even a Saturday night on a college campus with nice weather, a football game, make the most of it. I think that's a good time, period.
Yeah, I had a good time at the, at least until the first quarter ended of that Iowa game a few years ago. the on-the-field product was awful, but everything leading up to it was really fun. The tailgating and the walking over and they didn't have the lights then, but they were able to sort of dim some of them, I think, and just the walk out through the shell and everybody, and it was packed. It was fun. So yeah, get out to the shell for us who can't be there, especially Pat and I, especially me, who's all the way across the country. I will take these 3:30.
Go see a Colorado game. Go see Coach Prime.
Dude, I'm gonna be visiting my brother next week, and I'm like, go figure. They're on the road. Literally everybody's on the road. The Broncos are on the road. The Rockies are on the road. So yeah. I guess I got to go out there again and see.
You
got to
plan that out better, but yeah, you got to pony up some dollars for that. But I don't think it was I don't think anybody thought it was a wise move what Jay Norvell did and what he said. And frankly, if I'm the AD, I'm not so sure I don't fire the guy for throwing my team under the bus and making.
Well, they played well then, though.
But credit that, and I almost wonder to some degree if Norvell did that on purpose. I really do. I wonder.
These guys aren't stupid. Well, some are. Some are.
But, some are.
Mel Tucker.
Yeah, you're right. And I thought it was a dumb move, too. And I honestly, I don't really bet college football much.
But it was so dumb that maybe it was actually planned to add spice to the rivalry, to bring attention to Colorado State's program, and to maybe get Colorado so amped up that they weren't themselves, at least early on. But yeah.
Great point. Yeah.
Credit
and when I saw the spread was 24 points, because I was like, oh, I'm going to bet Colorado. They're all amped up. And then I was like, can't lay that many points. So I just
rivalry game
walked away. And then when I saw the final score, I was like, all right, that makes a lot of sense. Overtime game. Yeah.
I wonder how Vegas did. Did that many people?
Would imagine they made a killing on that game because Colorado is everyone's darling right now.
Yeah. Go figure. Boulder, Colorado is the center of the college football world.
Yeah. Yeah, the world
especially
really is coming.
Alabama so bad this year.
It's crazy.
You know, the funny thing is, what was the last team that got that kind of attention by their head coach? It was Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. And it didn't turn out so good. After a while, they thought it was too much, and he was getting criticism. And I guess ultimately, when you're not beating Ohio State, you know, that's the problem. But remember, he got a lot of this kind of attention early on, and it didn't go as anticipated. And then
for a school like Colorado,
even Les Miles at Kansas didn't get any attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Colorado, it's been since the 90s that they were good.
Right. So who's had more of a come up recently than them to get rid of Mel Tucker and hire Coach Prime? That seems like two opposite ends of the spectrum.
And now, that's right.
The job's open at Michigan State.
Yeah, that's right. And that's right. He was at Colorado. I forgot all about that. And he had done a pretty good year in year one and then a pretty good job in year one. I guess Colorado, I mean, they made out not once but twice with him leaving and then getting Coach Prime. So
Yeah.
Great stadium from what I hear. I still need to make
it. I love the campus. I've been outside of the stadium, never inside of it, but campus is beautiful there.
And it's a beautiful area. I'm looking forward to being there. Not for a game, unfortunately, but I'll find somewhere to watch the Maryland game with a mountain backdrop. Mike, I know you've got an article you're working on for BSL this week.
Yeah, and if it weren't for some of my other responsibilities, I would have had the notes from the Charlotte game out last week. So I'll have notes, just what I saw at the Virginia game, but also we'll throw in a few Charlotte. But I also I want to go through the Big Ten teams and how they made out in their non-conference schedules. They head into conference play and, you know, who was tested, who wasn't. So we'll have some capsules or profiles on those teams. So that'll be out in the next day or two. Yeah.
Awesome. And I will be out, but Pat will be taking over my job of writing up the game preview. So definitely check that out, BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. The podcast is going to be off next week since Pat and I will both be away, but we will be back in 2 weeks to preview Indiana, and we will look back. Will we be previewing Indiana? We'll be previewing Ohio State.
Recapping Indiana.
Previewing Ohio State, so a big game, obviously, at that point. Hopefully, we have 5-0 Maryland to talk about. But be sure to join us on the message boards, BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. Follow us on Twitter, at TalkingTerpsBSL. For my co-host, Mike Popovic, Pat Donahue, I'm Zach Kiesel, World Terps.